From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, President Trump met with health insurance executives at the White House earlier today to make sure there were no gaps in the response to the Chinese coronavirus. Then he went to Capitol Hill to meet with Republicans about an economic stimulus effort to combat the coronavirus fears. What is the administration proposing to stabilize the economy? Texas Congressman Kevin Brady, ranking member of the House Ways and Means Committee, joins us with answers. And in the February edition of the official Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, a study conducted by researchers affiliated with the pro-LGBT Fenway Institute claims that transgendered youth treated with puberty-suppressing drugs have favorable mental health outcomes. Well, two pediatricians on the board of the American College of Pediatricians says, they say not so fast. One of them, Dr. Den Trumbull, joins me later here on Washington Watch. The attacks on Christians in Nigeria seem to be coming with greater frequency and are becoming more deadly. Former Congressman Frank Wolf joins me with the latest on the precarious situation for Christians in the African continent's most populous country. Speaking of persecution, organ procurement and extrajudicial killing in China was the focus of a panel discussion on Capitol Hill this afternoon. Ethan Gutman, China Studies Research Fellow with the Victims of Communism Memorial Fund, was there, and he will be here later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. All right, the discussion surrounding coronavirus continues seems like all eyes are focused on the coronavirus, even though, as we talked about yesterday, I think the response is disproportionate to the threat. Nonetheless, the administration responding to, irrational fears that we see taking place in the stock market and elsewhere. On Capitol Hill today, he was discussing economic stimulus ideas with Republican lawmakers to bolster the economy. Joining me now to talk about this is Kevin Brady. He represents the Lone Star State's 8th Congressional District, and he is the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Committee and author of the initial tax cuts that were passed by Congress under the Republican Congress. Kevin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right. So the president was on Capitol Hill discussing ideas to bolster the economy. Some lawmakers not convinced that now's the time, that we need to wait until the dust settles. What did he propose, and how did lawmakers respond?
Yeah, great question. So obviously, the president's acted decisively on the healthcare side of it. That's still the top priority, obviously. But as you said, the stock market has reacted just in a so volatile way. It seems puzzling. But then I think energy took such a huge hit for states like Texas and Louisiana and others. It's a major challenge. And so the president wants to make sure he's protecting and acting decisively on the economic front, too. And we as Republicans, obviously, we want to help him protect, you know, American workers, retirees with their retirement in the stock market, and, of course, our local businesses. So what the president's looking at and why he's on Capitol Hill today and his economic team will be with Ways and Means Committee Republicans tomorrow is he's really looking at, one, how do you help those immediately who are perhaps quarantined or their businesses closed down or there's no customers? How do you help them in the short term to make sure they're not missing paychecks? That's one area he wants to focus on. Secondly, we know some American industries have already taken huge hits and are going to struggle in a big way, whether it's the cruise lines, the airlines, energy, others. And so he's looking at ideas on how do we keep those industries employing their workers as we work through this coronavirus challenge. And then the third, he really likes the idea of a payroll tax cut, which would help both families and local businesses have a little more cash as they're working through, again, the uncertainty of the coronavirus. Final point, we've learned in this global health threat that too many of our medicines, our medical supplies, those ingredients are manufactured offshore. And so we think there's an opportunity for a made in American medicines type approach that brings that manufacturing back to the U.S. And so that's sort of the three or four buckets that he's on Capitol Hill talking about.
Now, you were in Florida end of last week. I was actually down there as well doing a men's conference. You were speaking to some business folks. And, you said that, our economy is strong and it's resilient. And this is a big blow. There's no question. The mm-hmm. irrational response of the markets has a lot of people shook. And then I would also mention on the energy, there's additional factors there with Saudi Arabia and Russia and kind of this oil war. So there's more going on there. But that said, you've said maybe we need to wait a little bit to see what the outcome is here before we jump in with a stimulus package so we can better diagnose what the best remedy might be.
Yeah, that's my thinking, is that this is moving everything's moving fast. A lot of uncertainty. Thank goodness, thanks President Trump, we come into this with the strongest economy on the planet. That's going to serve us well. There are already some big hits, but we don't know, as we've said it, we can't diagnose the patient yet. And know how best to respond. And I think the president wants us to be thinking now about how quickly and what is the right thing to do to help the economy. But I will tell you too, Tony, we will strongly rebound from this. There's no question in my mind, because we were so strong coming into it.
Yeah, and again, I'm scratching my head when I compare the numbers. The CDC's numbers on the number of people who've contracted flu this year, in this flu season, 32 million people. 20,000 people have died from the flu, from influenza. This is a more potent virus,
no question
about that. Nobody's arguing that. But the response, again, is just irrational, I think part because the media has been, just pounding it. I would agree, and that you said the administration has responded decisively. I think they have. I think the president today talking about with healthcare executives that test would be offered free of charge. That's going to mm-hmm. be given to patients. Telemed services for seniors, so they don't have to go into the doctor's office. So, quite frankly, I've been around here a long time. You've been around a while. I've not seen an administration respond so with such focus and vigor as they have on this crisis.
I totally agree. And you and I have been through a number of these global health challenges as they reach America, including, remember, the H1N1, which in 2009 affected 62 million Americans, killed 12,000 of our brothers and sisters. Yet in this case, the administration is responding so quickly, so smartly. And look, we know what to do. You contain the spread of these diseases, you treat the symptoms, and you accelerate the vaccine. Only they're doing it at light speed compared to how the country, the government has responded in the past. I'm really impressed by what they're doing and how quickly they're doing it.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Kevin Brady of Texas, my guest. He is the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Committee and is the chief architect behind the Trump tax cuts that were passed under the Republican Congress. Was the president listening to the members who were saying that, hey, let's maybe wait just a little bit and see what the final result here is with this virus?
Yes, the answer is yes. So he met with senators today, engages with the House, or his team does, tomorrow and Thursday. But I think senators and members of Congress are split as well. Some of them see already dire circumstances, like in Florida, where we were, with the cruise ship industry, airlines, tourism being so major that way, and who want to see big and bold this very moment. And then there are other folks who are saying, look, let's take a good assessment of this, and then let's really target the release. So I think he's hearing from all quarters on this, which is why I think engaging early, going through all these ideas, knowing what we want to do. And then, of course, Tony, what we don't know is what do Democrats want to do? You know, is this just another excuse for a big spending bill, you know, or expanding government in some way? We don't yet know that.
Well, that seems to be what they are floating in part. They want to increase unemployment insurance. They want to require employers to provide sick leave. So, I mean, they're always looking at how do you expand the social spending as opposed to more a more precision-based response to this that addresses the greatest need in a short-term basis that allows the industries to get back on their feet and carry themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, like unemployment, for example, our states are in great shape. Their trust funds are really solid. We've had less than, 3.5% unemployment for quite a while here. They're in great shape to handle unemployment if that occurs. And on the paid family leave, truth of the matter is most businesses, they're working with their employees. They want to keep them. They know, if they get quarantined or they want to work remotely, every business is figuring out how to accommodate their workers and address this. So I just don't see the need. I think it is, as you said, an opportunity to expand government in the net permanently, but this we believe, like most, will be a temporary challenge. And I noted today I was over at the Health and Human Services has a coronavirus command center, response center, and so I took the Ways and Means Republicans over there. Really impressive effort. But one thing I noted is that China, their cases and deaths have both appeared, spiked, and now are nearly zero, all within less than a month.
Right.
And now the new cases are outside China, but there is some predictions that as we test more, get those kits out, there will be cases that are acquired, that we have the opportunity to tackle this challenge on in a fairly short timetable too. So that kind of goes to your point. Let's make it temporary, very targeted. Let's not end up expanding government as we do this.
Yeah, and the infection rate in China, in Wuhan, basically the concentration was so heavy, you had more cases of it. But as you say, it's spiked, it's down. You know, we have a more dispersed population here. It wasn't as intense. I think this could pass, if people will keep their heads about themselves, this could pass fairly rapidly.
Yeah, I do too. And look, I know everyone's an abundance of caution. That's very good. But like the flu, as you said at the beginning, this is targeted to the elderly and those who are already ill. We can help them.
Yes, and we should, and we will, and we are. Mm-hmm. Kevin Brady, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
All right, you too. Congressman Kevin Brady of Texas. Look, the fear. I mean, I'm going to keep hitting on this because it's irrational. We need to take precautions. Yes, do all the things that they tell you to do health-wise. But we don't need to live in fear. There's no place for it, especially as believers. All right, when we come back, a study suggests that, in an official journal, suggests that treating youth with puberty blockers has positive mental outcomes. But two docs say no. We'll join them next.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemicalabortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Sorry, as we were going out there, I lost my notes. I wanted to put this out there for you if you'd like to participate in a quick poll question as to whether or not the president, if the president and Congress should move forward with stimulus initiatives now, whether they should wait or you're not sure. Let me know. You can participate in this. Just text radio to 53445. That's text radio to 53445. Jot that down. Jot down the number 53445 and text radio. I'll send you that poll. I'll share the results with you before the end of the program. All right. A study published in the Official Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics claims that puberty blockers lead to positive mental health outcomes for youth. But two pediatricians on the board of the American College of Pediatricians say not so fast. One of them, Dr. Den Trumbull, joins us. Dr. Trumbull, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you and your colleague, digging through this data, actually say that the data actually shows the reverse of what they're claiming.
It does, Tony. It at least shows there's no benefit when it's objectively looked at. But unfortunately, the researchers took a very biased, poor design approach to the research, and I think they achieved the result that they desired to achieve.
Well, you may not want to bring this up, but I will. In looking at those who conducted the research, they're affiliated with the pro-LGBT Fenway Institute, which their whole purpose is to promote these types of outcomes for the LGBT community. We've seen this before. But, I mean, for the American Academy of Pediatrics to put this in their journal, I mean, this now calls into questions a lot of these studies that are placed in these what I would call prestigious journals, and this is dangerous, I think, for healthcare in the country.
It's extremely dangerous, and unfortunately, the American Academy of Pediatrics has been doing this more and more with social issues. Unfortunately, it's a very prestigious organization that, in general, is very objective in its research, but not when it comes to some of these social issues. You know, Tony, you would assume that researchers pursuing an answer in this very controversial area would choose the most rigorous of standards to begin a study and to complete a study. But in this situation, they've not. It's a poorly designed study. It's a study based upon interviews. It's what's called a cross-sectional study that cannot prove causality. It can only show association. And then finally, it's not a longitudinal study. In other words, they didn't take a group of adolescents, follow them over 10, 15, 20 years, and see the results of the therapy that they instituted in the beginning. Rather, it is an interview with these transgender-identifying adolescents recalling their past and testifying as to whether they feel better about what they did or not.
All right. You're going to have to help me out here, Dr. Trumbull, because it's been a while since I was in college doing statistics and tracking all of the, you know, analyzing these studies. But in looking at what you have put out and what they've put out, it looks like, in terms of the flaws in the study, what they're basically trying to say is that those individuals treated with puberty suppression, that they had better mental health outcomes, which meant a reduction in suicide ideation. Now, the research, as you point out, has some holes in it because it's self-reporting, and we don't even know those who went through the puberty suppression whether or not they committed suicide, which there actually shows that there is still a high rate of suicide ideation among even those who had the puberty-blocking drugs.
Sure. In both groups, the high rates of suicidal ideation, 50% or higher within both groups, were present a year prior to the study. But the authors don't bring that out. It's available in the charts when you analyze it. And then furthermore, when you take a more robust measure, and I'm not a statistician myself, but I have colleagues who are, when you take a more robust measure of suicidal risk, and that is ideation with a plan, there's no difference between the two groups when you use the data that they used.
So let's talk very practically about this issue from a standpoint. We've got a lot of parents that listen, and you know this is kind of like the frenzy that's to the coronavirus, where people are just acting irrational based upon what they're hearing, and social media is filled with this message for youth. It's in everything that they see and hear, and it's just the increase in the number of children with issues of their gender has, you know, skyrocketed. How should parents deal with this?
Well, one study recently that was published in this same edition of Pediatrics showed that the incidence has doubled. It's gone from 7% to 14% in adolescents who I would say are gender dysphoric, gender confused. It is a social movement, Tony. It's not based upon science, and that's the problem. However, the scientists to whom legislators and school officials look, i.e. the American Academy of Pediatrics, are not being honest and objective. So the whole movement is being misled, and parents are being misled as well. You know, it's common sense. You can't change the sexuality of a child. You can change the way they look. You can stop perfectly normal puberty from occurring, which is harmful in and of itself. But you can't change the chromosomal makeup of the child. So these children do need help, but they don't need cross-sex hormones. They don't need puberty blockers. They don't need gender surgery, gender reversal surgery. What they need is counseling. And that's not the primary message of these larger organizations.
And it begins with parents listening and being involved with their children, finding out what's going on when you see these dramatic shifts and seeking that help. Dr. Trumbull, thanks so much for taking time out of your afternoon to join us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Dr. Ben Trumbull. All right. I mean, look, parents, this stuff's happening out there. You need to be aware of it. You need to know what's going on and know that this is a social trend, as he pointed out. It's dangerous, very dangerous. Speaking of danger, attacks on Christians in Nigeria seem to be coming with greater frequency and are becoming more deadly. Former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf joins me with the latest on the precarious situations for Christians in Nigeria. That's next. Don't go away. We're coming right back after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, the president, I mentioned this, so we were talking about this earlier with Congressman Kevin Brady, the president on Capitol Hill, talking with Republican lawmakers about stimulus, a stimulus package to help stabilize the economy in the wake of the irrational response to the coronavirus. I want to know what you think. Should the president and Congress respond immediately with something? Should they wait and really diagnose the situation a little bit better, or not sure? Let me know. Text radio to 53445. The number 53445. Text radio in the message. I'll send you the poll. Take it. I'll share the results with you before the end of the program. All right, persecution of faith groups around the world continues. But in Nigeria, it's intensifying. Christians being targeted by Boko Haram and others. We're seeing these with greater frequency and more intensity. One of the leading voices on behalf of Nigeria, calling for a special envoy to Nigeria to help bring some type of resolution to the African continent's most populous country, is former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you. And let me thank you and thank your listeners. And I appreciate so much what FRC does and has done, but is doing in the future.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We're just following in the footsteps of some great champions for religious freedom like yourself. Explain to our listeners the critical situation in Nigeria.
In Nigeria, you have three of the most dangerous terrorist groups in the world. Boko Haram has killed more Christians in Nigeria than ISIS killed in Iraq and Syria combined. Not many people know that, but it has. Boko Haram has committed genocide. Secondly, the Fulani militants are committing genocidal activity and crimes against humanity. Thirdly, Nigeria is the third most dangerous nation in the world, Afghanistan first, Iraq second, and then Nigeria. Millions of people are living in these camps, they call them IDPs. You've had whole areas of the country have no longer education. You've had 15,000 Nigerian women and girls taken to Israel for sexual trafficking. Every time a boat sinks in the Mediterranean, it usually has a large number of Nigerians that are trying to get out. If you want to look at the conditions, your listeners ought to look at, go online, look at the eulogy given by Catholic Bishop Matthew Kuka, K-U-K-A-H, at the funeral mass of a seminarian who was killed in the Kaduna State by Boko Haram. It is just out of the world. And so I can't understand why the West is not focusing more on this. The Irish rock singer Bono said a couple of years ago that if Nigeria implodes, which I think it will implode, it will be an existential threat to Europe, England, and beyond, including the United States. And if you look at the Jamestown Foundation, they do great work on terrorism. ISIS is now moving in. So now you have Boko Haram committing genocide. You have the Fulanis committing genocidal activity, a little less than that, but genocidal activity. And now ISIS is moving into Nigeria and the Lake Chad region. You remember, six years next month will be when 240-some Christian girls were taken by Boko Haram. The world did hashtag bring back our girls. President Obama did it. Prime Minister Cameron did it. All the beautiful movie stars did it. It'll be 6 years next week, and 100 of the girls have not come back. So you have a situation that is literally out of control. And I think you need a special envoy for Nigeria in the Lake Chad region, almost the way that Senator Danforth was appointed by George W. Bush. Somebody, it ought to have the announcement in such a way that it's clear to the bureaucracy that this person represents the president and the secretary of state, because then that enhances that person when they go abroad to negotiate with other allies and the Nigerian government. Lastly, you almost need, and you're old enough to remember when Colombia was unraveling, there was a Plan Colombia. You almost need a Plan Nigeria / Lake Chad region. Deals with terrorism, deals with famine, deals with hunger, deals with education, deals with bringing the World Food Program. It deals with corruption. It's one of the most corrupt government. And the Buhari government, frankly, they ought to be called out. We are giving them so much foreign aid, and they're doing things, and we're not saying almost anything about it.
Yeah, I don't think people realize what you said earlier, the significance of an implosion in Nigeria because of the largest country, population-wise, 200 million people, where they will scatter, right, and the implications that will have for the rest of the continent, as you pointed out, Europe. Congressman, we're up against a break. Can you stick around for another question? Okay, great.
Sure.
Congressman Frank Wolf, former congressman from Virginia, we're talking about Nigeria and the precarious situation there. I want to get a sense from him the time frame here. How much time do we have to respond to this? Because I saw reports where Boko Haram there in Nigeria, Turkey is funneling weapons to them, creating greater instability. Of course, that diverts U.S. attention to another place. They don't want us focused on Syria and Iraq. Anyway, we're going to continue our conversation with Congressman Frank Wolf, and then we're going to talk about our organ harvesting in China, extrajudicial killings in organ harvesting. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come after this.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. If you would like to take our poll question about whether or not the president and Congress should act immediately with a stimulus package, wait, or you're not sure, text radio to 53445. You got about 10 minutes to take that poll. 53445, the number to text. I'll send you the poll. Put radio in the message line, the number 53445. All right, continuing our conversation with former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf. Congressman, I mean, you've been raising this alarm about Nigeria for years. It's intensifying. I do believe, I know for a fact that the Secretary of State is paying more attention to this because it is, I think everybody understands, I've been to the State Department and my role as USERF chairman discussing this issue. They are paying attention to it. But your sense, the timeline, how long before this just erupts and it's beyond being able to solve the problem?
I think very soon. If you read Bernard Henry Levy's piece in the Wall Street Journal December 20th, he ends by saying this will become a Darfur. And I and Sam Brownback were the first two guys to go to Darfur. Nobody would call it genocide. We came back. It was genocide. Rwanda, if you recall, cables were coming into Kofi Annan about Rwanda. See the movie Hotel Rwanda. Were coming into Secretary of State Christopher's office about it. They did nothing. Bill Clinton felt so guilty about doing nothing. He went to Rwanda the last month of his administration and apologized. It's coming soon, and I'll tell you, Europe will not be able to handle it. They will be flooding across. Europe has not been able to handle a million refugees coming out of Syria and Iraq. They will get millions and millions. Bono, the Irish rock star, said it'll be an existential threat to Europe and beyond.
What would be the first step that a special envoy should take?
He should, one, it has to be somebody that the president validates and the secretary of state validates, because that has to be done publicly, because the bureaucracy will fight against it. If you recall, George Bush appointed John Danforth, Senator Danforth, publicly in the Rosebud. You would convene all of our resources. One, it's an intel issue. It's a military issue, not to put our people on the ground to fight, not that, but training for human rights. You remember when Colombia was unraveling, we had a plan Colombia. We need a plan Nigeria, Lake Chad, work with the French, work with the British, work with the Germans. Education in the northwest portion. We're giving foreign aid to Nigeria, some of it. I don't even know where it's going. We give them millions and millions. With regard to there's a climate problem, the Sahara Desert, what do you do with regard to the agriculture? What do you do with regard to hunger? Bring in the World Food Program. But put together a plan Nigeria, somebody who has the support of the president, just to put a low-level person in, and nobody knows who they are, is not going to do it. But somebody like that, plan Nigeria, Colombia. Otherwise, I believe Levy's right. We will see genocide similar to Darfur and then potentially into what took place in Rwanda. Go back and look at your history. Biafra took place in Nigeria. We will see thousands and thousands die. We will see a base for terrorism in that area, and the impact on the world will be unbelievable.
Well, this administration has responded to a number of crises with intensity, discernment, and taking on problems that others would not.
If it had not been for this administration, and particularly Vice President Pence, this administration, we would have seen the end of Christianity in the Middle East, in Iraq. It was this administration that changed the whole dynamics, and literally, you know, more biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country in the world other than Israel. Right. They literally said, you're right, we got a good administration with good people, and now the time is to get the right person with the right policy, get this done. The poor Christians are crying out, and I think we got to act.
Well, let's pray and act, hoping the administration will do the same. Congressman Frank Wolf, as always, great to talk with you. Thank you for continuing to stay in the fight.
Stay after China. They stay after China. They are doing terrible things to many people. God bless you. See you, Tony.
All right.
Bye.
Congressman Frank Wolf, great man. All right, speaking of China, that is next. A policy forum earlier today entitled Organ Procurement and Extrajudicial Killing in China. One of the panelists joins us now by phone. He was going to actually get here, but it was the traffic here in the city is pretty intense. Ethan Gutman, China Studies Research Fellow with Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Ethan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. The forum today there on Capitol Hill, give our listeners a sense of the focus.
Well, I think this is where, you know, things have moved on in spite of the fact that sort of the media kind of rediscovers this issue every couple of years. You frankly set your watch by it. The fact is there have been a lot of research that's come out of, there was a London China Tribunal run by Sir Geoffrey Nice, who's arguably the greatest human rights prosecutor in the world. He prosecuted Milosevic. And at the same time, Matthew Robertson, a colleague of mine at Victims of Communism, put out a great new report, which is well worth anybody reading. It kind of sets the standard now for clear thinking, I think, on this issue. It goes through the evidence exhaustively and very carefully and very soberly. And it's clear that what we're looking at now is something like Organ Harvesting 2.0. Organ Harvesting 1.0 was Falun Gong, and now it's 2.0, and it's the Uyghurs in Xinjiang.
Now, this is based upon a look at the numbers in terms of the organ transplants that are taking place in China. I mean, it's become a major industry, and there's no way that there can – I mean, there's no other explanation for the vast amount of organs that are being transplanted other than the government's taking them from people involuntarily.
A couple of years ago, we put out a report, and it actually got a lot of play, at least in the newspapers, that said, look, we're looking at not 10,000 transplants per year, which the Chinese had been claiming for about 10 years, but 60 to 100,000 transplants per year. And this was based at actually looking at the hospitals very closely and what they were reporting all over the country. This was an alarming disclosure. And I think what's happened since then is we've started to look at where those are coming from in a very clear way. And the Chinese were claiming, well, we've got all these new voluntary donors. But
Matthew Robertson and a Israeli doctor, Dr. Levy, put an end to that by showing that the voluntary donation numbers were based on an equation, okay, an equation which was supposed to show a perfect a curve, yes, that would show, oh, look, we're just getting more and more of these voluntary donors out here. You know, people are doing this for free and because of the goodness of their hearts. That wasn't true. You can't come up with a perfect curve like that in real life, okay? And, you know, anybody who's looking at the COVID-19 stuff knows the Chinese numbers look pretty suspect as well. But right. I don't need to get into that here. But I think, you know, your audience is not the WHO. And it's not the World Health Organization kind of, you know, praising China for bringing down the COVID-19 crisis. Your audience could look at those numbers and go, this looks weird, okay? Same thing, we haven't had a chance to analyze those numbers. That's sort of a side project. But I think we can say for sure that this is not coming from voluntary donors. And the population it's coming from, most likely, is the Uyghurs, because you have 1.5 to 3 million now in camps. And they are all blood tested, and they are all tissue matched. They're ready to go, and they are disappearing at an alarming rate. And I can say this because I've been doing undercover research on this, and I've been talking to a lot of witnesses that nobody else has been who come out of the camps. And I'm getting closer to a number, and it's surprisingly consistent from witness to witness. And I believe we're looking at numbers, you know, in the tens of thousands here that are going every year.
Tens of thousands of Uyghurs in terms of organ transplants?
Well, tens of thousands of Uyghurs who simply disappear, and they're carved up. Literally everything is pretty much taken.
Yeah.
These people are worth $500,000 easily. That's to a, you know, to a upper class Chinese person. If you're talking about a Saudi or a Japanese, you know, Japanese elderly male or female, it's extraordinary. I mean, you can get up to prices of easily $1 million for these kinds of organs. We're talking heart.
Ethan, I know that there's more information has kind of come out from China, especially as it pertains to the Uyghurs leaks of documents. I mean, there's a lot of people now looking on this, thanks to the work of folks like you that have been on this for a long time. Do you think it's just a matter of time until we find the smoking gun, so to speak, of the fact that this is happening?
I think it's a great question, but I don't think it's ever going to be a smoking gun issue. This is a truly complex issue, which is one of the reasons I somewhat sympathize with reporters and having trouble sort of staying focused on it. It requires being kind of a China expert. It requires being a medical expert. It requires a knowledge of history and human rights and genocide. And it requires a highly developed sense of tragedy. Okay, this is a difficult one. It's always relied on a lot of different points of evidence. We've had doctors who come out and said, we had a doctor who came out and said, I did this with my own hands. I cut a person open while they were still alive. He's admitted it. We had Dr. Ko Wen-je of Taipei who said, you know, I knew about they were selling Falun Gong organs, and I went ahead and taught them how to use ECMO, advanced technique of removing organs while somebody's still alive. And I did it anyways. Okay, that's, you know, he's had to admit that, kicking and screaming the whole way. But the fact is, we've had some witnesses here. It's never enough. It will never be enough until we actually get a person who was half harvested but lived anyways. Okay? And even then, that'll be under question. So I don't think it's a question. It's not really that. The difficulty here is that it's China. There are huge economic interests at play. Even if you're looking to decouple from China, people want it to go somewhat rationally. They don't want this to sort of end in tears. So I think that's the big pressure we're dealing with here. And then for a lot of countries, for example, a lot of Muslim countries who should be supporting the Uyghurs, they're looking at the Belt and Road Initiative. And they're looking at the big money coming out of that.
Right. Yeah.
So now what's happening now? I mean, you must be aware of this, is the coronavirus is throwing everything off. Okay, we don't know if the Belt and Road Initiative will survive. So I think all these, and the WHO is suspect, and the Chinese medical establishment's numbers are suspect. And for that reason, I see a glimmer of hope that this will now sort of take off fully as an issue.
Yes.
You know, I've worked on this for over 10 years, and I will continue to work on it till I die. Okay. As far as that's my assumption right now.
Well, Ethan, I appreciate you joining us. I would add one thing to your list of what we need to understand is that it requires that we understand how the communists fail to see the value of human life in terms of how they can
Absolutely.
Do this. And that's a Absolutely. Fundamental element that is driving this. Ethan, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Cheers.
All right, Ethan Gutman. It's an alarming You know, I even hate to talk about these topics, but you need to know that it's happening. This is China. This is what we're dealing with in China. And there have been individuals critical of the president's tough stand with China on trade and other things. And a lot of this stuff is being exposed. The president's taking a lot of these things on, and now is the time to deal with it. In part, how can we do business with a country like this? All right, I'm going to continue this conversation. Joining me in studio to talk more about this, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy, and Ariel DeTurco is here as well. Ariel, you were actually on Capitol Hill today for this this hearing.
I was.
Let me ask you this. Your major takeaway, Ariel, in terms of what you heard there at the event?
Well, Tony, it was like you said. It was that China really does not value human lives. They view their own people as a resource to exploit rather than as people they should be protecting. And I think that really points to the dangers of the Chinese Communist Party. And we see other elements of this as well. They'll use their people as a resource when they need organs, and they'll take it from their prisoners of conscience. They don't respect the rights of their religious believers, of religious minorities. This has a lot of consequences, and I think it's time that the American government start taking that seriously and start noticing the differences that the Chinese government has in terms of values.
You know, Travis, this is the Uyghur population there in China is one that we've talked a lot about. One of my prisoners of conscience was a Uyghur who was being held. I mean, we're upwards of 2 million possibly Uyghurs that are being held in these camps. We've talked last week about how they're now being farmed out across the country to work in factories, many of those factories supplying American companies like Nike and Apple. I mean, indirectly, they're complicit also in this organ harvesting. They're supporting the Communist Party's suppression and use of these people.
Tony, the term willful blindness has a lot of applicability here. Whether it's companies who should know better, who are happy to keep their eyes covered and look the other way when exploitation is occurring in order to make an easy buck, certainly that's at play when it comes to China. We look to the business lobby's powerful pushback on anything which would hurt their interests in China. This has the consequences, though, for religious freedom, for what Ariel just mentioned in terms of the organ issue and human rights. A lot of consequences for people we need to stand up for and speak up for them in China.
Well, sorry, Travis. Ariel, we're out of time, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about this later. Hey, poll results, folks, 10% immediately, 79% said wait, 11% said not sure. Be sure about this, though. Join us tomorrow here when we come back with more Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.